Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Hi, this is Ben McKay from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean.
Thank you, Ben McKay. Welcome to another episode. If this is your first time listening to the show, then welcome. My name is Dean Vasek, and you can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangas or on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. So I'm back today with Jesse to preview our game on Sunday coming up against the Suns. We talked about Kane Corns and what is going on there, as well as Todd Goldstein's 300th game. A lot to talk about, so let's bring Jesse on to talk about it right now.
Jesse, welcome back to the show. I know you couldn't make it Monday with the boys after holding the banner high and proud for Daniel Howe last weekend for his 100th game. But we have a lot to discuss, and we'll start with the media and Kane Corns, who keeps deflecting the blame or taking any responsibility for why that player that left us is getting booed so much, blaming David King and everyone else for it, saying we shouldn't have traded him even though he asked for a trade, and his hashtag ice bath in every Twitter feud he has with someone. What is this guy doing, and what has he got against every figure at North Melbourne?
You know what? He's the only phrase on Twitter that I have blocked is Kane Corns. He's the only person I have blocked, and yet he seems to continuously end up on my feed. He has a problem with North Melbourne. I don't want to go into the conspiracy theories about Horn Francis always going to Port Adelaide and Kane Corns is, but I honestly think last year his media around the Jason Horn Francis at North Melbourne last year was very much, I think I tweeted about it mid-year and said he is trying to create an agenda where he's going to leave and go to Port Adelaide. He was on it from the start. He wanted him at Port. He pushed it through the media and got him there. And I think he's just trying to cover his tracks a little bit. I don't think that he enjoyed that he got, that the president kind of, gave him a bit of a smack in the pre-season or once we got Clarko on board. I don't think he's liked some of the attention that he's got from the North fans. People have called him out on things. Look, I'm not going to say that all of the commentary from North fans about Jason Horn Francis has been acceptable. Absolutely not. He makes a valid point. I'm sure there's a lot of people who have posted on social media saying things that are highly inappropriate. But at the end of the day, I think it's a very long bow for him to say that this whole booing saga has anything to do with us. He got booed at a game between Collingwood and Port Adelaide. I don't know how many North fans would have gone to that one. And then he got booed at a game against between, who was it, Essendon and Melbourne on the weekend. I don't think there was many North fans there either. So, look, I think I tweeted and said I don't particularly like the fans of other clubs booing Jason Horn Francis. I don't really understand it myself. I've got nothing personally against him. It just didn't work out. When we play him, I'm going to boo him. If I was there, I would boo him. And then I'd get over it after that. It just seems I get one out of the way entitled. But for him to come out and say this week that it has anything to do with us is really long bow and really disrespectful. And, Kingy had every right to come out and blast him and call it what it is and say, the only reason that most fans on Twitter from other clubs seem to have an issue with it is, one, a lot of them felt sorry for us and felt like the number one pick should have stuck in there. And a lot of people were just sick of Kane Corns's, ongoing media around Jason Horn Francis. It's so evident in what he is trying to do that fans of other clubs had enough. They don't like it. It's a bit rich for him to come out and talk about how, we're saying, again, targeting us, that we're saying things about him. Yet he tweeted on the weekend to a thing about Harry Sheezel's disposal count being the most of any player after five games and going, how many of these are kick-ins? He's only averaging one or two kick-ins a game. But he comes out and why retweet that? Like, you're obviously A, trying to get a reaction, and B, why do you need to say that? We're talking about the guy who in a preseason game that was Will Phillips' second game in 2 years, pretty much, came out and said, oh, this isn't good enough, and did a whole feature on the Footy Show about him missing some handballs playing against the Bulldogs. Did a whole feature on this kid saying he's not good enough. So it's extremely rich for him to come out and say that. But I don't know what anyone is expecting. He is a shock jock. That is all he is. That's all he is. He knows that he can get reactions, and that is what keeps him relevant.
Well, that's exactly right. That's pretty much summed up there. I mean, it does keep him very relevant, and I think it's good for ratings for SEN and so forth that he creates all this controversy. And he even said he's going to keep hashtag an ice bath and so forth in the future. Do you think he'll get booed this weekend? Oh, I don't think he'll get booed this weekend as much because he's got a home game, but next away game in Melbourne or wherever they play, do you think he'll get booed?
It's a difficult one. I think they've... I think from memory, they play us in a few weeks, don't they? It's only like 3 or 4 weeks maybe before they play us. I mean, that's in Tassie, so it's a little bit different. I think next week they play St Kilda or something, I think I was reading, St Kilda or Essendon or something over here. It'll be interesting because the thing with footy fans is that once they know that a player doesn't like something, they tend to do it. Now, you know, I didn't like the billing of Adam Goods, you know, but a lot of people did that purely because they wanted to be on some silly bandwagon at the end of the day. And I feel that that's going to happen with Jason a little bit, where he got booed for whatever reason and may not even have anything to do with him. And now that it's become a thing, it's going to just keep getting bigger and bigger. And especially when they play bigger clubs, you know, the Essendons, the Carltons, the etc., who have got large fan bases. There's going to be a group of those who, you know, have a few drinks and they jump on that bandwagon. I don't necessarily like it. I think he's been really, and just to be very, very neutral, I think he's been really good this year. I think the comments that I think Kane or some people in the media made this year is, I think actually Damien Barrett made it today in his column. He goes, Port Adelaide probably don't win 3 of the games they've won this year if he doesn't play as well as he has in several of those games. So he's been really, really good. So kudos to him for being able to put up with it. Again, I think North fans have got every right to do it. It's a bit weird that everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is a little bit weird, and it probably has a lot to do with Kane Corns and rubbing it in our faces and every little good thing he does. He seems to let the world know. And when people highlight all the bad stuff he does, which is generally his defensive side, which he needs a lot of work on, there's no doubt about that. Then he gets highlighted and Kane Corns gets about 500 videos sent to him
and I think that's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it. That, you know, people are highlighting his deficiencies, like you just said, which are mostly defensive. I've done exactly the same thing. You know, after round one, when he played, you know, he's almost best on ground. Kane Corns dresses as him on the footy show. Like, people just have enough. Most footy fans do not like Kane Corns. They follow, you know, they follow him and they listen to him because people like that type of personality. They like someone who creates controversy, and they like being annoyed about it. But, you know, I blocked him at some point last year because it was just becoming too much. It was so evident his bias against us.
Yeah, I agree. I guess that leads me into my next point, and that's he's talked about Tarryn Thomas and all the chances he's given. Now, we have given him a lot of chances. It's fair to say that he's running out of chances, Jesse. What do you think of the club getting him back into the VFL club? Program, is that fair considering all he's done, especially the latest latest incident where he's driving with his feet up on a dashboard? What do you think about that?
Yeah, look, a lot of people have completely different opinions on Twitter. You've got people who are very much in the "we should get rid of him" camp, and there's a lot of people who we should be 100% behind him camp. I'm sitting on the fence a little bit. Part of me wants to remember that he is still, you know, he's a young kid still. He is a young kid. He's made a lot of mistakes. And a lot of the things he's done should be just common sense that you don't do them. Him and the whole club would be extremely disappointed in how he has acted. But we do have a certain level of duty of care to him. He is a young man. He obviously hasn't been around the right environment. He doesn't have a lot of role models in his life, obviously, because... or else he wouldn't be acting like how he is acting. I understood where people like Eddie Maguire were coming from, and I know it's not necessarily probably his in his best interest to be commenting on these type of things, but he made some valid points, and Clarko kind of reinforced these, where when we kind of exiled him, when he made these mistakes, there was a part of me all along that said, these are the type of mistakes that when a young kid makes them, exiling them and just pushing them away from the club isn't going to help, because you're not, then he's in his own environment doing his own thing with no one around him, no structure, just go do this class. And I don't necessarily think that that helps. So I can completely understand what the club are saying is, let's get you around the other players. Let's get you in an environment where people are supporting you and people are trying to drive higher standards from you. But at the other side of the coin, you know, a lot of, especially our female fans, have been very vocal on what they think, and they have every right to be. You know, some of the things that he's allegedly done and, you know, that he's in court for are disgusting. I hope that he can pull his head out and that he can realize that what the mistakes that he's made. As I said, he is young. There is an opportunity for him to do that, but it is a big redemption arc, especially at this point. I mean, even on his latest antics of driving the car with his feet up on the dashboard, you know, swerving around the road in the country, wherever he was, when he came out and commented on it in the media, it wasn't, oh, I'm really sorry, I shouldn't have done that. It was, I shouldn't have sent that to the people. That's not really an apology. So, look, I'm not sure if he gets the point. I'm not convinced that he's going to turn it around, but, geez, I hope so, because, you know, he's an extremely talented player, and I don't want that to factor into it. The second thing is, as I said, he is a young man, and you'd hope that most young people can turn it around just for the sake of their whole, you know, their own life.
Well, yeah, I couldn't agree more. No, I mean, he needs to, pull his head in, basically. But, 22, it's not that young. I mean, he's a grown enough man. And obviously he does have influences, and he has had influences for a number of years that are probably affecting his behavior as well. Clarkson has come out as well and said that, look, he's had a lot of things that have happened to him in the past, and it's our duty of care to look after him and give him the best environment possible for him to thrive in life. So, you got to back the club in this situation, whether you agree with it or not, and, you know, starting him off in the VFL program. But if he keeps playing up, then that could be it. Look, I mean, we're certainly hoping we can rehabilitate him as far as on the field, and maybe at the end of the season we'll make a decision on him and, you know, look, it might be best for him to move interstate to another environment or so forth. Yeah, we do have a duty of care to look after the individual as well. And you can't sack him. I know a lot of people have asked to be sacked him, but the AFLPA will jump up and down and he'll get...
We can't do that.
He's on a big contract as well. He'd probably be owed, you know, well over $1 million still. Yeah. So, you can't do that at the moment.
I've said that if it gets to the point where that is the solution, I'd just be letting him sit there, to be honest. I know that sounds very cynical, but if it got to the point where we had given up and we're not going to play him, you know, you're not going to get much for him anyway. I know that sounds a bit bitter, but I just wouldn't play him, because you are right. He is on massive money. He's getting paid good money at the moment to sit around and make these mistakes. So if he's going to continue to make them, you know, we're paying you anyway.
No, that's right. Well, we'll move to the positive for the week and Todd Goldstein's 300th game for the club. What are your fondest memories of him, Jesse?
Oh, God, he's been such a player, hasn't he? I think the one, and I know a lot of North Melbourne fans say this, my two memories that distinctly come to mind is the mark against Geelong in the final, dying seconds. That was a great one. What was that, 2014, I want to say? The main one for me was, again, I think it's 2014, I want to say, the game against Essendon. I think I had him in Super Coach that year. He got like 220 or 230 Super Coach points. It was pretty crazy. I remember watching him run around, and it was the most dominant display that I've seen by a pure ruckman, since Dean Cox It was one of the most pure ones that I've still ever seen. Look, Max Gawn, especially in that final last year where he kicked three goals and he dominated the ruck, very, very impressive. But that day, like, he was on. Like, I think he had something like 55 hitouts or something like that, nearly 30 disposals. Pretty sure he kicked a goal. I think I read something earlier or the other day, because he was up against Sean McKernan in that game. And I think he had like 100, like he got 100 ranking points just from hitouts to advantage. So the hitouts were clean. And I remember watching him just on the, there was this moment, I was with an Essendon supporter, I'm on the wing, I think it was at the MCG, it might have been. And he took this mark and he just walked off on McKernan, and McKernan's face looked so defeated. And you just knew, even sitting there on the sidelines without, you know, a TV in front of you or the stats in front of you, you just knew that he was on. He's been an incredible player for the club. And I think the amazing thing about Todd Goldstein is, do you remember that period of time? It might have been back in maybe 2015 or 2016 when he had that real low period. I think it was
2017, actually.
Yeah, and I think Brad Scott put him back into the VFL for a few weeks. Like, he that year, he was just completely off. And I'm sure there was a lot of personal things going on in his life that year, but he just had a really poor year. He couldn't do – he just looked terrible around the ground. He went back to the VFL to get some touch. I think we still had Braden Pruce on the list at that point, and I think he got a couple games over him. There was a point there where I thought, geez, he's shot. You know, this is the end of him. Unfortunately, he's gone. And I think the fact that he was able to turn it around as well as he did to come, because he has consistently over his career been one of the premier ruckmans. He was unlucky to only win one All Australian, in my opinion. He probably the most consistently good ruckman in the last 10 years of AFL. You know, we've had better ruckmen in particular years, but in terms of consistency over a period of time, he's one of the great ruckmans of all time.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, very stiff. He played in the era with Dean Cox, who was one of the best ruckmen ever to play the game. So that's why and Aaron Sandilands was a very good ruckman around that time. So he's always around the fringes of the All-Australian squad. But unfortunately, yeah, just couldn't get there because of those two boys. But yeah, there's no doubt we don't make prelim finals without him in 2014 and 15. He was a big, big influence around that area. And yeah, I mean, he you know, basically fed Ben Cunnington, Jack Zeeble, Andrew Swallow, all those players, you know, getting first hands of the ball and getting clearances through him, basically. So, and like you said, he was very good around the ground, very good hands, very good kick, you know, for a big, tall guy. Can hit targets. So, yeah, I mean, he pretty much carried us into prelims. He was our most important player during that period. And, even last year, at 33 years old, he'd done that beautiful tap to Zerha to win us here. Our second game for the year and our last win for the year against Richmond. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of memories here. That final against Geelong where Tom Hawkins was marking everything last quarter and he just intercepted a mark, and which won us the game. So, yeah, I mean, plenty of good memories. We're certainly hoping we can get more. In saying that, do you think this could be his swan song? I mean, it sounds like he's keen. He wants to keep going on. He said his body's feeling good. But, could it be his swan song year and we move on from him?
It's a great question. I mean, got left out of the round one team because he obviously wasn't in great form. They went with Tristan. And at that point, you probably thought the writing was on the wall. Look, I think he's been pretty solid the last few weeks that he's obviously played. You know, it may not be at his dominating best of the past, but he's still easily the best ruckman on our list. It's hard to comment because, you know, Tristan, by all reports, had a fantastic preseason and then went down 20 minutes into the first game of the year. So we haven't really been able to see, you know, what improvement he really had over the preseason. Common Jones is a forward. I'll just leave it at that. So he is, in my opinion, still the best ruckman we have on our list. And I think at the end of the year, they'll have to make a call. But getting rid of him at the moment and leaving Tristan exposed with, you know, Callum Coleman-Jones, you know, around the mark, but not really a ruckman, in my opinion. You've got Edwards, who has still physically, he's made some improvements this year, but still coming along. And then you've got Free, who looks like a good VFL level ruckman. But there's still not a hell of a lot of depth there. So I mean, I would probably give him another year after this, especially if the AFL lets us continue having more rookie picks. Then I would give him another year. But look, a lot's going to have to do with probably the second half of the year. We'll see if he how his body holds up. We'll see how Tristan comes back, what type of form Tristan's in. It's going to be an interesting one. I hope he does. I hope he does. Because when he rucks out there, the main thing is, like, he may not have the physicality and stuff that maybe that Tristan would offer but anymore, but he is still our best chance of getting a hit out to advantage. And especially with a young midfield, I still think that's, you know, super important.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, the second half of the year is going to be interesting when Tristan Sherry comes back, if those two can play together, which is going to be a challenge in itself, because we are already probably a little bit top-heavy and we are a little bit slow on the outside. We'll talk about changes because we have got a lot faster this week. But, yeah, look, that's going to be the key for him next year. So, look, at the moment, he's got the job for, you know, the number one ruck for at least the next 4 to 6 weeks. Tristan Sherry's coming along slowly. Just started walking, I believe. So, yeah, we'll see how we go. Now, unfortunately, we have to talk about last week. Jesse, Clarko came out and said that our back line struggled to defend because of not having continuity each week, with each key defender having some sort of injury, whether it's pre-season or via the season. And that's why we got caught out with so many uncontested marks and easy goals last week. He did say we did butcher the ball and overuse the handball in the middle, which hurt. Is that probably a fair summary, you think?
I thought it was, and I also thought it was. You know, Griffin Logue's played most games. You know, he had the one game out with suspension, but he's played the other games this year. And I thought he's been solid in all of those games. You know, sure, it was Mackay's first game. But that wasn't bad defending on the weekend. That wasn't, I'm out of form, so I'm going to lose a one-on-one contest. That was, I'm just going to go for a stroll 30, 40 metres up the field and let Hipwood and Danaher sit on the ground in the goal square and just wait for the ball to get kicked. It was hard to explain. I've never seen that happen before. Just so many goals of their big forwards just on them. I don't know how you leave the key forward for an opposition team 50 metres on their own goal side and able to just stroll into a goal. That I'm confused what either... I was confused on the day what our defenders were doing. Then I was confused with what the game style was because we seemed to be playing a lot more aggressive than usual and less methodical. And then I think Ricky put up a post during the week that kind of showed what was happening up the ground and our midfield's inability to protect our back line. So I think it was a mix of our midfield not having a great day, our forward line not applying a lot of pressure, our up the field butchering of the ball altogether, and then you had our back line trying to play aggressive, but because it was getting turned over so quickly, they couldn't get back to their men. And why you would continue doing that for the whole game is a little bit frustrating. But, I mean, if you... It is possible that in the other games this year that the team was doing the same thing, that maybe our defenders were playing, you know, much further in front of their opponents in the other games, and we just didn't see it because we weren't making the mistakes up the field. Look, I just don't think we played well at all. The first quarter was great, albeit neither team defended. But we just didn't show up. Every single player pretty much played bad or but, you know, a couple guys who had big ticks, in my opinion. But, yeah, it was just a weird game. It stunk a lot of, you know, the form we were in last year. So... Look, I'm hoping that was a once-off and we can get back to, you know, the form that we were in the first 2 weeks in particular, or at least the game style that we had the first 2 weeks in particular. I much prefer that more methodical kicking out of the back line. Brisbane are a little bit like the Western Bulldogs in terms of against the poorer teams. I see them as being able to pile on big scores because they're such aggressive teams. So it is, they're probably our, you know, a bit of our Achilles heel at the moment. I think we'd perform better against, you know, a more defensive good team. So yeah, it wasn't a great day, was it?
No, I mean, like you talked about the aggressiveness, it's sort of something like, you know, defenders will just go start going aggressive when it's 2 minutes to go in the game and you're kind of 10 points down. All right, we need a goal. Let's just all push up. But we, yeah, like you said, we're doing it all game. And even Clarko said that, you know, their second goal was just similar to the second half where they just got easy goals out the back. Yeah, which like you said, I've never experienced so many soft, easy goals. I think it was 25 uncontested marks inside their forward 50, which is unheard of, really. So I think it was more the system. And, you know, you can't blame the players for being out of form because look at the changes. I mean, he's made two changes. One of them was enforced and the other one was probably a guy that needs a rest. So, yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. We'll talk about one of the defenders, Ben McKay. Now, when will you be starting to feel nervous about him and if he hasn't signed yet?
Every game that we lose by a big margin makes me more nervous. I still think he will stay. That's just my opinion. I think, you know, when he was young in his career and he looked like not amounting to a whole lot, we kind of stuck by him. So I still think he will stay. I'd say at the moment I'm reasonably confident. It's just one of those things that, yeah, every big loss kind of makes me think, oh, hopefully he's not reconsidering this. I'd want to get signed up by around round 12, 13, 14. If we're getting into the second, you know, the last quarter of the year, even the last 6 or 7 games, I'm going to start getting a bit nervous. Look, it would be a big loss. Look, I really, really like Griffin Logue. He's a bit undersized, but I think he's got massive upside and his ability, what he's able to do. I don't want to lose either of those two guys because I think they could form a really good 1-2 combination for the next, you know, next 5 to 10 years, really. But, you know, it is one of those things. I think we've been pretty lucky over the last decade in terms of the players that we've lost. I think Jason's probably the only player we've lost that we've really, really wanted to keep. We've kept most others, or we've only got rid of the ones that we probably wanted to move. So I think we'll keep him. I think I'm still reasonably confident, but it is one of those things that as we get closer to the end of the year, it's going to make me more and more nervous.
Yeah, I think so. It's probably one of those things that they're probably talking now and they're probably negotiating things. Like, I think the club and manager are probably talking about, you know, incentives and all that sort of thing. I think they'd have a rough figure of where they want to go to and maybe years of contract, which would probably be close to 4 or 5 years. I think we'll try to lock him up for as long as we can because who else are we paying that money to? We might as well go for the upside of him. I mean, he's probably the best free agent out there as well. So, yeah, we might as well. But it's probably like you're looking, I think I talked to the boys the other night about this. Yeah, you're probably looking at 800,000 with incentives to get up to $1 million on games played and things like that. So, yeah, hopefully we can get that. And his manager will probably start spreading the rumour out soon to probably try and squeeze more money. The other clubs are interested in him and go through the media and so forth. So you might hear in the next week or two that maybe Essendon's going to make a play for him. You know, they're going to offer him 6 years or something like that just to get a bit of, get extra money because that's what agents do at the end of the day. So we'll see how we go and how that plays out. Now, I want to talk to you about a weakness in the team as well. Now, I noticed in the reserves last week that Blake Drury played forward, moving from the back line. He went through the midfield as well. Could he be the small forward that we are desperately needing? Because at the moment, it was only Kane Turner last week, who did a lot of chasing, and he's very much a defensive forward who won't impact the game or win you the game. We need someone else there. Could it be Drury, Jesse, in the coming week?
It's a good question, isn't it? It was interesting for them to put him forward. I think he had 17 disposals or something. I saw he kicked a goal. I think his tackle numbers were decent. Three or four tackles. Look, it's an interesting one. I liked him off the half back line just because, you know, he was an accumulator. He is okay by foot, especially when he goes for more, you know, shorter passes. You know, a lot of people linked him to, you know, a Caleb Daniel type. He definitely doesn't have the accuracy of Caleb Daniel. But, Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think as a junior, he played mostly midfield and then forward, as opposed to down back. So, you know, he's averaging 18 disposals over the year. He's been able to rack them up a few times. So I'd be interested to see how he goes as that more defensive type forward. Look, he does have a small frame, meaning that, you know, his tackles are going to, he's going to have to be pretty good in the gym when it comes to his tackling. But yeah, there is some gaps at the moment. There is some definite gaps at the moment up forward, you know. Spicer was another one on the weekend, had five or six tackles. I saw he probably played his best game in the juniors, in the seconds, I should say. And he had a fair few touches. So, yeah, look, I think the fact that we've put him forward is Clarko and the coaching group going, we have a problem at the moment where we're kind of being forced to play, sorry to say it, your mate, Kane Turner. in terms of none of it, and I think I said to you before we started the podcast, I saw a stat on Twitter saying that we had no one in the top 70 players in the competition for pressure acts. I think our best pressure/tackling player inside 50 is Charlie Comden. So, and he's probably the tallest. So we don't really have a lot of players who tackle down there, who will keep the ball in. And that's a massive, you know, we've been saying this for 2 years on the podcast, that, you know, this is a massive thing that we need to address if we want to become a good side. You can't just let the ball come out like it is. We need players attacking. So, look, I think that's kind of an acknowledgement of that, the fact that we've put him forward. There's a weakness. They want to address it. Spicer, you know, had a good game, and hopefully he continues to have a good game. Hopefully he continues that form, and that would be really good, because we need a few players who can play that forward pressure role in the team. You can't just have, you know, a group of players who are there to kick goals. You need someone to lock that ball in who frightens the opposition defenders, and we just don't have anyone like that at the moment. You know, Zerha can apply some physicality, but he's also having to do that in the midfield, and he's also one of our own, you know, our main outlets for goal. And yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. We've got a gap, and I think they've put him forward to see how we go. You know, he had 17, a goal, 3 tackles on the weekend, and I think if he can continue to do that, he'll definitely push himself into the side.
Well, I believe Phoenix Spice and Jack Marnie, when I was watching anyway, I only watched the first half of the VFL, and they both were on the wing. They pushed the outside of the forward 50. So they obviously wanted to try Drury there, who played midfield and forward, predominantly as a small forward from what I've seen. So, yeah, look, you got front square to a couple of contests, and we're desperate for that, because as soon as that ball hits the ground, like you said, we're a bit slow there. There's no doubt about that. And, yeah, it seems to get walked out. Now, Kane Turner's getting asked to do a lot of work, a lot of the, you know, work that you don't want to do, and that's a lot of defensive work, chasing shadows, you know, those rebound defenders. So, yeah, we definitely need another small forward there. It's interesting. We'll talk about the team changes soon, and I'll talk about what might happen and how things might pan out. But we might as well move to this week. Now, Jai Simkin out for somewhere between 1 to 4 weeks. He has been important for us this year. He missed against the Hawks, and we struggled that game without his presence. And we seemed to fall apart last week when he came off in the midfield early in the second quarter. Someone in that midfield needs to step up in his presence. Is it a collective effort from guys like Phillips, Powell, Cunnington? We'll talk about it in a second. Or does maybe a Zerha just run right and play more midfield, been a twitch he seems to enjoy? What do you think?
Look, it's a really good point that you said there in terms of his importance for us this year. One of the things I saw, this was pre the weekend, I saw SEN putting up a tweet, and I happened to send it to my friends. The Champion Data's top 10 players after round 4 this year. LDU was first. Jai Simkin was 6th. The other players in that list, English, Dacos, Pendlebury, having a fantastic year. Marcus Bontempelli, Clayton Oliver's 7th. Libba, Goulden, and Jeremy Cameron. Jai Simkin was 6th. You know, this is a guy who last year had a good year, but a lot of players have always knocked, a lot of fans have always knocked him on his ability to dispose the football. They focus on, you know, he had that breakout year and everyone really liked him. And then I think people have focused a little bit more on his limitations. I think he's been really, really good this year. You said it. Against the Hawks, we didn't have him. We didn't have LDU either, but they're very different players to one another. Simkin adds a level of hardness to the middle. He also has a fantastic sidestep. I think he organizes the other players around him a little bit. You know, he's meant to be a bit of an on-field leader. He was best on in the first, best on for us. Lockie Neal was best on, but he was the best player for us in the first quarter on the weekend. And then he broke his hand and the midfield went to crap after that. LDU didn't have his best game, absolutely. And we can't expect him to every week. But he's been super important for us this year, Simkin. I think he's having, I looked at his stats the other day and collectively they're his best stats of his career thus far. He's been fantastic. And it is an interesting one. What do we do now that he is out? You know, hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. But yeah, what do we do now that he's out? It gives a good opportunity for Phillips. Phillips had, I think, 18 or 19 disposals on the weekend. He was really accurate with it. I think he had a really good player rating. So it's a great opportunity for Phillips to get a go. But Phillips is again a very different player to Jai Simkin. Tom Powell still doesn't seem to be getting a lot of center bounce attendances. He seems to be playing more on the peripherals. I'd like to see him get a bit more of a chance. Ben Cunnington, I think we'll touch on a little bit later, so I won't go too much into him. I don't necessarily look. I've ummed and ahed on this. Zerha going into the middle should come in for a bit of impact. I don't mind him going in there for impact, but we still need him up forward. He is one of our main avenues to goal. With the changes this week, it is going to be interesting to see who steps up. I think LDU is going to have to be the main man. And then it's going to be interesting to see what we do around him with, you know, some of the changes that we've made this week. It's, you know, whoever the final midfield is going to be an interesting one. He's very unique, Simkin, in terms of what he offers. So it's going to be tough to see how we cover him.
Yeah, that's I'm a bit worried about that, to be honest with you. He is very explosive out of packs, and he does set up a lot of our play in the midfield. And, yeah, I mean, we do talk a lot about LDU and Harry Sherzen, rightfully so, but he's been right there with him, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
And we haven't looked good when he hasn't been on the ground. So, yeah, it is a bit of a worry, but, yeah, hopefully this next bloke, I might as well talk about him now, Ben Cunnington. A lot of, you know, his form and – you know, has been up and down, and he has reasons for that, no doubt. Yeah, he's gone through a lot the last couple of years. How have you seen his season so far?
It's a tough one to talk about because obviously we all want him to do well after everything that he's been through. I think the main problem with Ben is, and I did get some stats for this earlier, he's averaging 18 disposals this year, which is the lowest that he's had in his entire career, other than, you know, he had limited games last year, obviously. 2020, he had limited games, obviously. Our last time he averaged under 20 disposals, other than those two injury-interrupted years, was his first 3 years of football, where he was averaging, or so first two, I think, 13 and 12. He's averaging as much now as he is in since 2012. So his disposals are right down. He hasn't put it on the scoreboard. In terms of clearances, I think his clearances are the fourth lowest of his career, which he's a, you know, he's a clearance player. Over his career, he's averaging like six clearances a game. At the moment, he's down at like 3.6. It's the lowest of his career with the exception of the first two seasons. You know, he's having a really, really poor year. And I think I said in the when we met up last week prior to the game on the weekend against Brisbane that I actually would have rested him. I think I understand that what type of character he is, but he's a very proud character, and he would be hurting being out there not being able to contribute. But he's not contributing. He's looking a little bit off the pace. He's looking a bit slow. He's mucking up his handballs. He's not able to apply pressure on the opposition. he's a bit of a liability out there. And I hate to say that. I hate to say that. And I don't think it's necessarily one of those things that the more we play him, he's going to get back into form. I'd prefer to see him get 1 or 2 weeks in the VFL to find a bit of form, because I think he just needs to build up. I think he had so long out of the game, he just needs to find some fitness. He just looks off the mark when it comes to fitness. You know, even when they've been, you know, in the preseason, Clarko was talking about, oh, we can play him as a forward a lot of the games. He can't play as a forward. He's slower than Charlie Compton and Nick Larky. So, you know, he's in a tough spot. I am reasonably confident that he'll get himself out of it because of the type of, you know, he's a hard-working player. He'll get himself out of it. He's you know, an absolute superstar for the North Melbourne Football Club. But right now he's in a bit of a hole, and I don't think we can necessarily carry him because we've got, you know, a bunch of kids around there who are contributing more and who are having to make up for his mistakes and his lack of form. So while it's really sad to say it, you know, I understand he's in the team, but if I was, you know, making some of the calls, I'd give him 1 or 2 in the VFL. Maybe they keep playing him until Jai gets back, because we can't lose the, you know, the additional piece of leadership in the middle. It's going to put too much pressure on LDU. You know, Greenwood's out of the team this week. So look, hopefully he proves me wrong, and I would love that if he could just, you know, find some form on the weekend and have a dominant display against the Gold Coast. But yeah, I'd be giving him 1 or 2 in the VFL. And I know I'm probably very much in the minority when it comes to that, but that's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, you brought up his stats in previous years. In 2021, it was, you know, before he got his second cancer diagnosis. In 15 games, he did average 26.8 disposals. He was ranked second in clearances per game, and that's in the competition. Yeah, in the competition. Second in contested possessions. Yeah, he was fantastic. Like, he was a clearance player, and this year it's just it's like he's gone from 7.5 clearances per game in 2021 to 3.6 this year. He didn't even get a clearance in one game, the game against Carlton where he got subbed out. It's fair to say that he looks at probably a step slow. Like, he looks a bit rushed when he has a footy, and maybe that could be a sign that the game is getting a bit too fast for him. But I certainly am not writing him off just yet. And I think he will bounce back in the coming weeks once he picks up the pace of the game, because he is turning over. In tight, when it's really in tight, he's still good. But when he's got a bit of space, he looks a bit rushed, and his kicks have been a bit off too. So, hopefully he can turn it around, because, we need him back to close to his best anyway. Whether he ever gets to that, I'm not too sure. But can't write him off. We're writing off Jack Zeeble probably 6 months ago, and look at him now. So
I think I wrote a formal apology to him during the week. He's, spot on. You know, you can't write someone of that quality off, because I think I tweeted during the week, the only thing that Jack isn't doing is he isn't having score launches. But in terms of every other stat that he's having, he's been great.
Yeah, of course. Aiden Corr as well. How have you seen him since he has come back? He made a couple of bad decisions last week, particularly early, which cost us goals. A big name recruit from GWS as well. Where do you think he's at? He's part of the leadership group last year also, but he's not this year. Where do you see him?
It's a tough one. It's hard to mark him on the weekend's effort, because everyone else in the back line was as bad, if not worse. So I don't want to hang him on the weekend. I think that's tough. Look, he isn't blowing the competition away. He's not performing as well as I would hope. I'd be expecting more for someone on his level, his pay, etc. Look, I think, to Clarko's point, we do need to get a longer period of him, Logue, and Mackay together to see how they can work and how they'll work against normal forward lines. You know, the Lions kind of did what the Dogs did in the preseason, and they had a very tall forward line which stretched us, and I don't think the defenders knew kind of what to do. Against a normal forward line that has, you know, 1 or 2 key position players, I think it's going to suit us a lot more. I think Corr is far more comfortable going up against someone his own size. So, I'm I think he's done a couple of good things this year. I don't think he had a great one on the weekend. I think he has a lot of room to improve. Yeah, he's kind of just in the middle of the rung at the moment. Look, the problem is that there's not really anyone in the seconds putting pressure on him. You know, I would have been hoping that, you know, Dawson would be applying a lot more pressure than he probably is, to, you know, push his way in the side, because then at least it puts some pressure on Cole. But at the moment, there's not, other than Aiden Bonner, who, you know, no comment. There's not really a key position player really applying pressure on those guys. So look, let's see how he goes, you know, this week against the Gold Coast, how he goes in the weeks after this against forward lines that are, you know, not as tall. And then I think we can get a little bit better of a judgment call on where he's at.
Yeah, I'll probably give it another 2 or 3 weeks. And if these guys are playing together for that long, yeah, I understand Clarko did talk about continuity. So, yeah, we'll give him 2 or 3 weeks. Hopefully they do work a partnership out, especially if we keep playing this like zone sort of defense where we don't, you know, play on a man per se, hopefully they can work together, because it does look like a little bit of a complicated defense rather than actually just being on man. So we'll see how that comes along. Let's move to the team changes in. Aaron Hall and Paul Curtis come in for Liam Shields, who's been probably rested, I think might be the sub this week, and Jai Simpkin with Hugh Greenwood as emergency once again, maybe as a sub, but I'd like to see him get a full run under him. He's been, you know, 23rd man for about the last 3 weeks, so he needs, you know, a good run in the reserves if he's not going to play. What do you make of those changes? It looks like we're trying to go a bit faster now.
Yeah, look, Paul Curtis was always going to play. He had an absolute blinder on the weekend. He was great. Aaron Hall's an interesting one. I think he's kind of got himself in the side purely based on the numbers that he's had in the VFL. I think I've been to one of the VFL games and I've watched at least two in their entirety. His kicking is still a question mark for me. He can run off the half back line and kind of scattershot it. But his weight of numbers, his possession, you know, he's a bit of an older character as well. So we bring in someone with a little bit more experience. It changes the dynamic of the team in terms of, you know, I think, you know, Ricky was having a guess earlier that, you know, Hall probably now goes to the half back line, that moves Tucker, you know, on ball or onto the wing potentially, meaning it allows us to kind of cover for Simpkin, unless they've got some crazy idea they're going to put Aaron Hall in the midfield. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's going to play off the half back line. So it allows us to move a few other characters and a few other chess pieces around, and I think that's kind of why they've done it. I would have liked to have seen Bergman get back into the team. I thought he was playing good football. I'd like to get him a game. He seems like a really promising kid. He missed because he was sick. So I think it's a bit unfair. I thought he had a decent game in the VFL on the weekend. I think he's better defensively. He's a better kick, better pressure player than Hall. But I don't have any issues with Hall playing. I think you're right in terms of the emergencies. I don't personally think that Greenwood will be the sub again. They have to give him he was named on the VFL team, which I don't know, it doesn't mean a lot, but I think he'll play VFL. More likely than not, Liam Shields or Lazaro will be the sub for mine. I think it'll be Shields, but I would love to see Lazaro get a go at it, because he has been in decent form in the VFL, especially in the midfield, which with Simpkin out is a little bit weaker of a spot for us. Look, there's still some conjecture on whether or not Harry Sheasel plays. You know, the fact that he is, you know, he was taped up even yesterday at training and he was looking sore. I've got a sneaky suspicion Sheasel will be a late out, because why would you risk him? Shields will come in and play that wing role, and then Lazaro is the sub. That's my gut feel of what will happen. But yeah, look, I don't hate the changes this week. Shields, I didn't think was in, you know, fantastic form, so I can understand why he's been dropped. Greenwood needs to go get a game in, you know, a full game in the seconds, get some form. We can't keep playing him as the sub. And yeah, Curtis, I'm excited to get him back in, because I still think he's got a massive upside.
I'm talking about Sheasel, and if he does play, is there a possibility, I know this might be a bit of a long shot, that they do push him forward? Because, you know, we talked about we need another small forward. He can play that role if needed to be. I mean, probably plays more as a mid-size, but he can play as a small forward. Is there a possibility that he could push forward and Aaron Hall be that rebounding defender?
Potentially. Absolutely. Hall could also, they might surprise us. Hall might come in and not play in the back line. Hall might play forward, wing, anywhere other than the ruck. You know, he's a pretty versatile player. He got those Brownlow votes as a midfielder earlier in his career. So I wouldn't be surprised if Clarko did something very, very different that we weren't expecting this week. Look, you're absolutely right. They could play. There's a lot of players on our team who can play in different positions now. I think that's one of the positives over the years to come. You know, you've got Sheasel who is playing down back, but could easily go midfield. He could easily go forward. Curtis Taylor can kind of roam around. You know, Powell's playing on the peripherals. Katerna can play every position other than the ruck, albeit, you know. You've got Daniel Howe, Turner. You've got a few players who can actually go in different positions. They may not be superstars in those positions, but they can move around. So it gives us a bit of versatility.
Mm. Yeah, well, big game this week against a team that is under pressure. Gold Coast have played some good footy in parts, but have fallen away in parts of the game as well in big ways. They've been inconsistent, and we are under pressure as well after last week. And we don't want to have a bad performance for Todd's 300th. How do you think this game will go?
Look, I've tipped us for the moment, not with a massive amount of confidence. I think Gold Coast have been better than the form than the latter shows. I think they've really been in it for a few games, and they just haven't been able to hold on. They've got a quality midfield; it's very, very strong. It will push us. Their back line is decent. Their forward line. You know, they've got King who will come good at some stage. They've got Lukosius who just kicks balls, goals from 70 on one step for fun. They're a team of very high draft picks. And while they haven't got it completely together, they will come good. Anderson and Matt Rowell are pretty decent midfielders with Tuke Miller in there. They're going to be a hard midfield to crack, especially with Simpkin out and, you know, Cunner's out of form. So, look, I would like to think that we get it done in Goldie's milestone. We have generally a pretty good record in milestones, albeit probably the last couple of years that hasn't really been the case. But prior to that, we have a good history of winning big in milestone games. So I'm hoping that the lads get up for him. I don't know what the weather's like up there. I haven't really done any research into that. I'm hoping that it's a good game. So I've tipped it. Margin wise, I'd probably say less than 3 goals.
Oh, if we're going to win, it won't be by much, that's for sure. if this season's any indication, or probably last few years indication. What are the keys for us to winning this week and getting back to the form of the first 2 weeks, Jesse? Like, is it going back to the basics of the first 2 weeks where, you know, we forced the team, like Fremantle was a good example, we forced them into a chip game, and, you know, pushing the ball sideways and pushing numbers behind the ball and playing a forward half game and keeping them forward half. Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, look, I want to see us go back to that methodical ball use out of the back line, which is what I think was the main thing we were doing in the first 2 weeks. We were methodical out of the back line. We took the kicks. We took a dangerous kick when it was still a high percentage kick, if that makes sense. I just felt like on the weekend, we just went back, reverted to everything. You know, the first few weeks, even against Hawthorn, when we were poor, we dominated the midfield. You know, we were a dominant team. We've been a dominant clearance team this year. And against Brisbane, we just weren't great. So I'd like to see us take it up to Gold Coast and beat them in the midfield, be methodical out of the back line. Don't be aggressive for the sake of being aggressive. You know, take your time, pick the kick, and then stream forward. Larky, I hope. Look, I'm pretty sure Larky was still under an injury cloud going into the Brisbane game. There was no way he was 100% fit. And, you know, I think the beat up on him is a little bit harsh. Charlie could have had an absolutely day out. Let's hope he does. I hope that he kicks straight. He kicks a bag. That would be great to watch. You know, Steve-O's been in great form, which is good. I think if we can get it forward in a more, the forward line looks to me that they can kick a large score if you get the ball to them in a certain manner. Larky in particular, if you can get the ball to him in a good, if he was in a good team, he'd score 80 goals because he benefits. And you saw that in the first 2 weeks when you're able to get the ball to him efficiently. So look, hopefully we're more methodical with ball in hand. It will be a little bit harder up north, you know, a bit more dewy, especially if it rains. But yeah, I just want to see a bit more of I want to see a game plan like the first few weeks because there wasn't one last week.
No, it was pretty much run and gun last week. And once the ball got turned over, we're pretty much gone. So yeah, no, we don't want to see that. So yeah, I mean, you sort of, so I was going to ask you about the final prediction, but I think you mentioned before, boy, it was under 3 goals.
Yeah, look, I'm going to say under 3 goals either way it goes. I don't think they'll blow us out of the park if they win. I'd like to think that we will come out firing even without Simkin. I think it'll be a close game, which is, you know, kind of the story of our year, at least the first 2 weeks. So hopefully it's not too close. But yeah, I think it'll be a close game. Hopefully us by 2-3 goals.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, and I'll definitely take that. So, well, Jesse, did you want to add anything else before I let you go?
All good, mate. Enjoy the footy tonight.
Yeah, I will. I'll probably finish editing this and I'll get on to it. But thanks for so much coming on the show, especially on a Friday night. I'm sure you had better things to do, but much appreciated. And we'll hopefully talk to you next week.
Well, good, mate. I'll talk to you soon.
So thank you very much to Jesse for coming on the show once again. Sorry I couldn't do this show yesterday on Thursday, but had to have a minor procedure done in hospital and wasn't home till late Thursday night, unfortunately. Apologies for that. Once again, thank you to all you lovely listeners for all the likes, comments, and RTs you do for the show. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to whichever podcast platform you use. Big shout out to Daniel Powell, who left me a nice review and rating on Apple Podcasts. I appreciate that a lot. It helps get the word out there to other North supporters, which is always a good thing. I'll be back Monday to talk about the game with the boys. So that's it for this show today. I might even do a Monday morning hangover show. So yeah, I'll probably put a tweet out Sunday night. So today I will leave a shout out to Tristan Cook on Instagram at celiac_cookie. Bye for now and go Ruse.